I'm a K2. I work for Core Security. Been with the HoneyNet for a while. Been doing security stuff for a few years. I do lots of little stuff with the HoneyNet. Code some stuff and things like that.
I'm Ed Bayless. I work at Indiana University at an advanced network management lab there. And basically, I'm a software geek. In my prior life, I was a network engineer, so I tend to hit a lot of the network side, plus some data acquisition stuff that we've been working on that we'll talk about later.
Hi, I'm Mike Schiffman. Not really a member of the HoneyNet project. I just sort of wandered up here, and Lance let me sit down. But I guess I've written some code, and I spoke yesterday, so here I am.
Hi, I'm Richard Labella from the South Florida HoneyNet project. I guess you can tell by the shirt, I'm from Miami. And we've been, HoneyNet project's been going on for almost a year now, since September 24th, 2001.
Jed Hale. I've been on the project for about a year. I work on data acquisition, data control, specifically using gateway IDS technology like Hogwash and the new inline snort stuff.
Hi, my name is Rob Lee. I'm one of the newest part of the alliance out here. I'm deployed a wireless HoneyNet in the DC area, and I work with SAIC, who's a corporate sponsorship for that HoneyNet deployment.
All right, what I'm going to do is kick things off, and then I'm going to hand things on as we go along to the real hardcore geeks that we have all here. Go ahead, next slide. Boom. All right, what we've done is we've just gone ahead and we've introduced ourselves. If you want a copy of the presentation, you go to our live site, you can download the very copy of the presentation we're about to give. Go ahead. The plan of attack, we're going to give a little bit about the HoneyNet project, HoneyNet's the enemy, real world hacks, and then learn more. Go back real quick. I'm going to lightly cover the HoneyNet project, who we are, what we do, why, and some of our older technologies. That's stuff that's been out for a while now. What we're going to do is focus on the new stuff. That's what's really happening. Go ahead. A little bit about the project. Everybody you see here is volunteers. We're an all volunteer organization. My voice is going, I'm going to use this. We have no funding, we have no resources. Yeah.
Pretty
scammed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We have a business model?
Yeah. But what we do is we learn about the bad guys and we share everything we learn with the security community. Basically, we're an open source intelligence organization. What we do is we do this by deploying networks around the world to be hacked. We just deploy the stuff, the bad guys hack them, and we watch them. Go ahead. So our mission statement, we actually have a real mission statement, is to learn the tools, tactics, and motives of the black hat community and share those lessons learned. Next slide. I really have three goals. One, awareness. The vast majority of the community out there is not aware that they're a target. They don't realize that their XP system sitting at home, their Linux box at home, the small business is a target. Anybody here, they're already aware. That's why you're here. So that really doesn't apply to you. But we want to prove to the large percentage of the community that anybody's a target. For the folks that are aware, such as yourselves, we want to provide information about the bad guys, how they do what they do and why. And then finally, there's a small group of people out there that want to do their own research. And we share with everybody how we find our information about the bad guys, so you can do the same thing too if you want. Go ahead. A little history about ourselves. We actually began informally in April of 99. It wasn't like, oh, hey, let's form this project, let's do all these wonderful things, let's do this and that. It was a small mail list and we grew over time. We didn't even call ourselves a HoneyNet project until June of 2000. We're currently in phase two of a phase three project. What are the three phases? Phase one was from 99 to 2001. It was what we used these first generation technologies. We were basically catching the script kiddies, the automated tools, the worms, and stuff like that. Phase two, what we're in now, we're deploying more advanced technologies. We're incorporating a lot of other organizations, going after more advanced guys. And then about 2003, 2004, we'll hit phase three, where we actually start deploying appliances. People can go ahead and all stuff is automated, ready to go for you. Some of the unique values of the project. First of all, we're totally open source. Not only do we share everything we do, but almost all of our tools are open source. We capture everything that's happened in the wild, so there's no theory. It's not like when we say, we think the bad guys are doing this, we think the bad guys are doing that. It's, hey, here we saw this, here we saw that. It's happening in the wild. It's happening to you. We're made up of security professionals from around the world. As you can see here, a lot of different talent, so we can plug into these skills whenever we need to. And finally, we have no agenda. We have no employees. We have no product. We have no service. We have really nothing to gain. So whenever we provide information, we can feel very unbiased information. Hear that, or totally made up. We're a nonprofit organization. Like I said, we're about as nonprofit as you can get. But we do have a board of directors. Actually, some of them are floating around. Jennifer Granick, George Kurtz, Bruce Schneier, and Elias Levy are on our board of directors to steer us in the right direction. No more than two members from any organization can be a part of the project. That ensures nobody has undue influence. I'm from Sun. We only have two Sun members. We got two from Cisco, things along those lines. One from Core SDI, things along those. Really a diverse set of skills and experiences. You can see that sitting here. And then we work virtually from around the world. We have no office. We're spread out. We have 30, 40, 50 people involved, and all 30, 40, 50 people are in different states, different countries, all part of the world. Go ahead. Anybody have any idea what the value of this number is? Go ahead. Raise your hand if you know what the value of this number is. Go ahead. What's that? Oh, directing our 501c3. Basically, what this means is, no, it's not HEX. It's IRS. This means we're tax deductible now. We're an official nonprofit organization. You got a CRA you want to give us, it's tax deductible. Anything you now donate to the HoneyNet Project is tax deductible. So this means we are now one big tax shelter. But seriously, around, we got points of contact. You got any hardware you want to dump on us, we're more than happy to take it, and you make money by doing it. Starting in 2002, and I'm going to hand the mic off to Richard, is we started the Alliance. Not only do we have just the project, but we got HoneyNet projects from around the world.
Thanks, man. Hi, I'm Richard LaBella. I'm from Miami, Florida. I started the South Florida HoneyNet Project September 24th, 2001. That's when I met Lance, and I kicked it off with just getting a bunch of folks in pretty much the South Florida area together. Went around to the ISSA, the InfraGuard chapters, and some of the local organizations and even members started donating hardware, and this thing grew. And now we've just got a 42U cabinet with all this hardware. And from there, we developed the HoneyNet Research Alliance. And the HoneyNet Research Alliance is it's really great because what it allows us to do, it allows other HoneyNet organizations from around the world to deploy HoneyNets. And the benefit to that is that we all get to learn together. We all get to share ideas. We all get to develop and grow this this technology further. We get to collect all this data. And we centralize all of our data collection to a centralized server, which lets all of the other organizations go to the server and then see all the logs, intrusion detection logs, firewall logs. Some people are using IP tables. Some people are using Checkpoint. For example, we use Checkpoint. So we get a lot of different types of opportunities to kind of correlate what all of us are seeing. So that's pretty much what that's about. And want to hit that slide there, if you don't mind? These are the Alliance members currently we have all around the country. South Florida HoneyNet Project, that's us. NIFI, which is Ed, right over here out of Indiana University. SAIC Wireless, which is awesome, awesome. That's Rob Lee, Washington, D.C. Net Forensics HoneyNet, Palladian out of India. Internet Systematics, ATT Mexico. And we have HoneyNet Brazil and Azusa, which is... Where's Bill? Hey, Bill. And so those are our organizations, and we're kind of growing that out. We go, I guess, to 15, right? Yeah.
You have HoneyNets all around the world.
Yep. Okay. So we got HoneyNets all around the world. We'll just keep growing. Hit that slide, please. Thanks. Okay. More about HoneyNets. I'll turn it back over to Lance.
So basically what we're saying is it's just not the HoneyNet project. You have organizations around the world deploying these HoneyNets, and we're all sharing the information. Any organization is welcome to join. Just go to our website, and there's more information about that. Now we're going to go into actually this technology that we are using to capture the information about the bad guys. Like I said, we're moving fast and furious because what we want to do is focus on the new stuff that we've never presented before, first time today. First of all, what is a honeypot? A honeypot is a security resource designed to be attacked. Its value is being probed, attacked, or compromised. A HoneyNet is really nothing more than one type of honeypot. There's many types of honeypots. How a honeypot conceptually works is it has no production value. So anything going to it or anything going from it is a probe, attack, or compromise. You know the bad guys are on there. makes reducing false positives, catching those false negatives much, much easier. If you're interested in learning more about honeypots, there's a website actually dedicated to just honeypots at tracking-hackers.com. Go ahead. Now, the advantages and disadvantages of this technology are is it really reduces false negatives and false positives because you're only capturing the bad guy activity. You're collecting little data, but data of high value. You really have minimal resources. A honeypot can be a Spark 5, 486. Conceptually, it's very simple. You just put it out there, and anybody going to it, it's a bad guy. Major disadvantages. One, very limited field of view. If they're not attacking the honeypot, you don't see them. So if they attack another system and they don't attack your honeypot, you just missed it. So it helps complement your network environment. It doesn't replace anything. The other thing is risk. Honeypots have lots of risk. The honeypot can be used to attack other people. That's what we mean by risk. Mr. Salgado will be getting into that in a little bit. So what is a honey net? It is a what we call a high interaction honeypot. The high interaction in that we don't emulate everything. We provide real operating systems for the bad guys to bust into. It's an architecture. It's not a product. All right, it's not something you install and boom, it's up and running, going along. Then you pop. What you do is you create this architecture, this fishbowl environment. You put your systems in there, and you let the bad guys hack it. You want Oracle on Solaris? Put Oracle on Solaris. You want Apache on Linux? Put it in there. You want IIS on XP? Put it on in there. And once compromised, we collect and learn all the tools, tactics, and motives of the bad guys. We sit back and watch. It's a big data collection system, but you have to hack it for us to collect anything. How it works, this network architecture, it's a highly controlled network where every packet entering, and as you're seeing, we'll see here in a moment, every packet leaving is monitored, captured, and analyzed. Any traffic entering or leaving the HoneyNet is suspect by nature because no bad guys should be going in or no bad guys should be going out. Makes data collection and analysis much easier. And all the technologies we're about to talk about now in reference to HoneyNets, you can also go to the website on the URL below. All the source code's there, all the config files, all the details. Go ahead. Now, a HoneyNet can be deployed many, many, many different ways. As Richard was pointing out here, organizations are using Firewall One, IP tables, some people are using Cisco routers. So really what it is when we describe these HoneyNets, we're not going to tell you what technologies to use. We're going to tell you what requirements you have to fulfill, and you use the technologies you feel most comfortable with, or we do ourselves. There's really two critical elements called data control and data capture. Data collection only applies if you have multiple deployed HoneyNets, like we do, because you have to collect the data from all the different HoneyNets. What we're going to focus on today is data control and data capture. Go ahead. Actually, let's go back real quick. Sorry about that. Go back. There we go. Thanks. Data control. What data control means is when the bad guys come in and bust into your HoneyNet, you got to make sure that they can't use that HoneyNet to harm other people. So we have to control what they can do outbound. You can't block everything outbound because they'll bust into your HoneyNet. They can't go out. They figure out they're on the HoneyNet and they blow it away. We've seen it. It's happened to us. Also, you got to let them go out and do some things, else you'll never learn. Never see IRC, download toolkits, shoot out emails, things along those lines. So the trick with data control is controlling what they do without them knowing they're being controlled. The other element is data capture, capturing everything they do without them knowing you're capturing it. So controlling and capturing is actually relatively easy. The real trick is doing it without them knowing that you're doing it. Because if they're on the honeypot and they know you're on a honeypot, it has no value. Go ahead. All right, I'm going to lightly cover this real quick, and then we're going to shift to let these guys talk. What I'm going to cover here is our Gen 1 technologies. This is the technology we used for Phase 1. We're now transitioning out of this Gen 1, or first generation technology. What you see up here is a network diagram of the HoneyNets we used to deploy. It uses first generation data control and first generation data capture capabilities. What you see in yellow are the actual honeypots. That's what you want the bad guys to break into. What you see the rest of is creating that fishbowl environment, that network architecture we were talking about. In the upper right-hand corner, you see that thing called firewall. That's what's allowing the bad guys to come into the network, but controlling what they can do outbound. So that's our data control mechanism, the firewall. And the router's doing a little data control also. The IDS system is our data capture. Remember, we had two requirements, data control and data capture. The IDS is our data capture. That dotted line to the network over there, that dotted line has no IP stack, so the bad guys can't see the IDS system. The idea is this. Bad guy comes along, he busts into the HoneyNet, and he hacks one of the yellow boxes. Solaris, Linux, default. We used to do default installs. Now we're customizing. So the bad guys go ahead, they bust into those boxes. So how many outbound connections do you allow? It depends on how much risk you want to assume. We normally allow maybe 5 to 10 outbound connections every hour or every day. Enough for them to go out and download their toolkit. Enough for them to go join IRC. Enough to send an email. But not enough to DOS whitehouse.gov. Not enough to go ahead and scan all of the .edus or things along those lines. Believe me, they try it 80-90% of the time. So the firewall just counts and blocks. Crude, but very effective against automated tools, worms, script kiddies, because they go in, they do what they want, and they go right back out. Question? The question was, is what happens when they bust in and they do more than 5 connections outbound? Won't they realize they're on a HoneyNet? Maybe. Majority of the time, they don't check. You get an advanced black eye, and they go out, and all of a sudden they figure out a HoneyNet. Yes, they'll figure it out. That's why we've got Gen 2, and that's why we're going to be talking about quite a bit about it. Second generation technologies fix a problem he just identified. Discounting is relatively easy to identify if you're looking for it. So that's why we're going to go into Gen 2 technologies here in a minute. This does work, though, especially against the automated attacks. The IDS system is capturing everything off the wire. Question? We use all varieties, but the majority of the group uses Snort. One of the reasons is Marty's on the team. Jen is also one of the main developers of Snort. And in fact, he'll be talking to you in a little bit here about the modifications that will be coming in Snort 1.9 that are just made just for HoneyNet. So we're tied in pretty tightly with Snort because it's open source, Marty's on the team, things along those lines. But you can use any other IDS system you want. However, we do not use the IDS system for alerting. Why would we want to be alerted when somebody comes in? If somebody comes into our HoneyNet, we know it's a bad guy anyway. What we use the IDS system is to capture every packet and every packet full payload so we can analyze all the packets at a later date. You're thinking, my God, you capture every packet and it's full payload? Yes. But that's only 5-10 meg a day at most, because we're only capturing the bad guy activity. So that's our data capture mechanism. If you go to our website, we'll show you our Snort configs and things along those lines. So the bad guys come in, they hack those boxes, they do all sorts of neat, ugly, nasty stuff. Now, one thing we do, we have all the honeypots logging to the log service. We also log system activity. Bad guys hack the honeypots, then they try to go into the log server. Log servers are normally more secure, so hopefully we'll see advanced attacks. However, what happens if they break into the log server and destroy the system logs? Have we lost all the logs from the honeypots? No. Does anybody identify the second log server we have in that network? The IDS. The IDS system is a passive log server. It's passively capturing every packet on the wire, including all the syslog packets on
UDP 514.
UDP 514 that are sending to promote syslog server. So the IDS system is a passive log server. That's important to think about it. This technique is going to apply to second generation. So first generation, relatively crude, but relatively effective against more basic threats. Automated tools, worms, script kiddies, people who don't look for this kind of technology. So what happens? They bust in, we capture the rootkits, we capture their tools, we capture their IRC chats, their emails. However, you have identified one major flaw. It's relatively easy to identify. The second major flaw, data capture. The bad guys use encryption nowadays. All of them do, even the critties. You don't have encryption installed on your computer, not a problem. They will install it for you. You see that?
You guys see it all the time.
They don't even use the SSH if it's already installed. They'll install their own.
Yeah, because it's Trojan. So how do we capture their keystrokes from the wire if they're not clear attacks? We'll get into that. We're going to demonstrate some stuff in our second generation technology. Rather fast, rather furious. I don't want to go on Gen 1 anymore because Gen 2 is real exciting. You want to learn more about Gen 1? Buy our damn book.
We're not for profit, by the way.
But buy the book.
But I really want to get into Gen 2 because this is the first time that we've presented it. Next slide. Okay, this just shows you how we do data capture, data control with the Gen 1 stuff, rather crude. the firewall, look at rule number 4 highlighted in white. It's saying if anybody from the HoneyNet tries to go to anything but your admin network, the production network, track with user defined, fire up an alert, and track what the bad guy's doing. We've done the same thing with IP tables too. But this just kind of demonstrates how the Gen 1 stuff goes. Go ahead. All right, Gen 2. I'm just going to give a quick outline, and then I'm going to let the hardcore geeks talk about how their code works, and then we're going to demonstrate it. The idea behind a Gen 2 is easier to deploy. You're going to see because we have data control and data capture combined on the same system. Also, it's going to be much harder to detect because we don't do the simplistic counting of outbound connections. We have more advanced methods for controlling the bad guys. Go ahead. Next slide. All right, let me just give you an overview. What you have here is, first of all, you see the second-gen HoneyNet. You see the HoneyNet sensor. It's a single system. It does both the data control and data capture. Much easier to deploy because everything's on one system. This is where in the future we can actually come up with appliance for a bootable CD-ROM. 2, it's a layer 2 device. It's not layer 3. No TTL decrement. No IP routing. No IP stack. No MAC address. The bad guy will never see the firewall because it's invisible. Layer 2. It's a bridging device. So every packet the bad guy sends to our HoneyNet or leaves the HoneyNet goes to our layer 2 bridging device without the bad guy knowing, giving us the ability to both control and capture his activity without him ever knowing. Also, you can actually deploy this in a production network. The network you see in that diagram is a full Class C network. It's only the bridge that segments the honeypots from the rest of your production network. So your HoneyNet can be deployed more closely in the rest of the environment. A Gen 1 technology, what would happen is the bad guys would hack the systems, and then they'd go out, they would count 5, 10 connections, and then block any more connections. We now have the ability, though, to go one step beyond that. Instead of blocking connections, we have the ability to block based on signature or modify the attack. Jed, why don't you go ahead and talk about what you've done and how that works. Start off with an overview of the value. Talk about how you do what you do.
Okay. Is this microphone working? Okay, great. I'm Jed Hale again. I've been working for about the last 2 years on gateway intrusion detection technologies. Our first attempt at it was done with Jason Larson, and that's Hogwash, which a lot of you have heard about. Some of you may have been at my talk last night. The basic idea behind a gateway intrusion detection system is you have full in-depth packet analysis. You can analyze the header, you can analyze all the flags, you can analyze the payload of the packet. You can do all the things you do normally with a intrusion detection system, but the same device also behaves as a gateway. So what that means is it controls which packets go back and forth onto your network by making more of an IDS-style decision. Hogwash did this by basically implementing the Snort intrusion detection engine. And Hogwash was a bunch of code we wrote that wrapped up Snort and gave it the ability to bridge, to do bridging, etc. It was a good first attempt. It works really quite well. A lot of people are using it. We're moving forward with the project, and one of the big frustrations we had with the Hogwash technology was I was stuck trying to backport stuff from the Snort project all the time back into Hogwash to try and keep up with what Snort was doing. It was a tremendous maintenance nightmare for the developers. So what I have done, and I've kind of officially announced it at this conference, is I've taken all the core gateway IDS functionality that you had with Snort, worked with the rest of the Snort development team, and we've merged all of the gateway functionality into Snort. So if in the Snort 1.9 CVS tree, we have inline Snort. I don't know if the merge has been committed yet, but I've got the diffs and they're ready to be committed. And what this gives you the ability to do is you use, instead of having to maintain, like for instance, a Snort distribution and a Hogwash distribution, you have the simple task now of just dealing with Snort. We extended Snort to be able to have keywords like drop. You know, so if the rule happens to match, you're getting it a drop. It has the ability, it does its linking up through IP tables via IPQ. So you have all the abilities that IP tables gives you also. Now, some of the things that are most pertinent to the Generation 2 HoneyNets is first of all, we have a lot of state counting mechanisms in there that keep track of what's going on with communication in and out of the network. And so we can do state counting, and we can detect the attempts to just do bold, outright denial of service attacks. We can detect the attempts to do port scans, all those things that involve hitting lots of machines really fast. We can detect those, and we can block them and prevent those from happening. Of course, that's something we could do in Generation 1 fairly reliably. That's not what we're really excited about. What we're excited about is the Gateway IDS. Now, we can write a set of signatures matching all the known exploits. And, in fact, hopefully, if you're on your toes, you're going to catch the black hat real soon after he gets in the honey net. You'll know how he got in. You can write signatures to match what he did to make sure that he doesn't go out and use the same exploit on somebody else. And now, so the goal is, the second problem we encountered thinking about this is, okay, it's pretty easy to match the attack and then drop the packets. Again, you're going to alert the attacker quite quickly because he'll get a reset back, you know, and he may just think that the service wasn't there, but if he looked from elsewhere, he may know that the service was open and he'll get onto you. So the next thing we decided to do was add the ability to the HoneyNet sensor to change the content as it moves through the sensor. So in other words, you can write rules that will say, if you see this sort of exploit leaving the HoneyNet, alter the packet. Alter the packet just enough to break the exploit. So the exploit will hit, it'll hit the machine and it won't work. And that's the basic idea.
Think about it. With the Gen 1 technology, bad guy hacks any time. Bad guy goes out to the internet 5 times, 8 times, 10 times. Say he goes FTP, 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 FTP. After you reach that limit, you block any more FTP connection. With Gen 2, what Jed has done is this. A honeypot attack, bad guy keeps FTPing up to the internet. We let him FTP as many times as you want. 5, 10, 1,000, a million times. However, the moment he launches an FTP exploit, and that goes through our HoneyNet sensor, how do we know it's an FTP exploit? Because it matches the snort of your database. We allow the packet to go through the HoneyNet sensor. However, Jed's code just slips one bit, so the assembler code goes through. And then when it hits the target, the attack's been disabled. So the bad guy is talking to the victim, it's just the packet has been modified. Question. What if they use zero-day exploits on our HoneyNet and we don't have a signature for it? We, the HoneyNet project, say yes, and we hear excited. Why? He's excited.
We got their wares.
Every packet payload, his source code, the code of the tool, and everything. We captured it all.
I think the idea is to just show that you're attempting to do the most that you can, right? You really can't do much against zero day.
Yeah, you're right. The zero day will get through and the zero day will do damage. We are assuming that risk, but for us it's worth it because we can learn that zero day attack.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing's perfect in these designs either. Like, it's always really interesting to see. I mean, the attacker can quite easily just attack himself with a known vulnerability, and if it gets modified, they can detect whether or not they're on a honey net. So, I mean, there's lots of issues like that we have to sort out still.
What we're doing now is we're introducing the intelligence of looking at packets and modifying the packet. So there's actually some other data control mechanisms we're going to talk about here in a minute, too. But, question? Don't forget, in this virtual land, we control everything. Hell, we can go ahead and redirect it to another honey net. Go ahead, hack it all you want. They think they're hacking. Why do we have to log on the internet? We can just go ahead and use a VNet, you know, a destination map on IP tables, and that packet gets routed to actually another HoneyNet. They think they're hacking WhiteHouse.gov, but they're hacking, you know, our HoneyNet WhiteHouse.gov kind of deal. There's actually other concepts. Ed, didn't you write the paper on throttling?
Rate limiting, yes.
Go ahead and talk about rate limiting.
Okay. Basically, one of the things that I wanted to include in my HoneyNet was, and share with everybody else, was the ability to, for things such as DDoS and other large flows that would be considered, you know, obtrusive and bad to have flying out of your HoneyNet on the outbound, I want to do rate limiting. And so what I've done is using basically either FreeBSD's capabilities or Linux's large capabilities do basically traffic shaping to do per host rate limiting. And so what can happen is you get full functionality from, you know, somebody intruding into the host. They can FTP all their stuff. But what you can do is you can limit them down to, let's say, 64 kilobits per second full duplex or any combination thereof that you would like. And 14-4, whatever you want, yeah. And the end result is if all else fails, so if for instance, there were a bug in Snort or in whatever it is you're using, yeah, because bugs don't happen, right? I've never seen Snort crash. What'll happen is it provides a bit of a fail-safe in that you can mitigate some of the bad things that can potentially happen by just basically rate limiting. And that way, if all else fails, you still constrain the pipe for each honeypot. And the interesting thing about doing it per host is if an intruder is logged into multiple machines, let's say on the net, on the honey net, it's harder to detect because each honeypot is provided its own amount of capacity. So it's subtle and it works really well. Actually, I've had an incident where it was tested where there were some things that crashed and that was one of the saving graces. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, one other thing I'd like to add to that is with the new configuration using the inline Snort stuff, it does fail close. In other words, if Snort dies, the HoneyNet shuts down, which I think is a great thing. If they come with some way to crash Snort, thinking, okay, yay, now we'll evade any IDS, that's great. But they also just, you know, shut their access off so they can't do anything else while you're blind.
One of the things we like to do, too, is we're going to cover types of Gen 2 data control. Which one is best? We actually don't use one. Multiple types of data control to protect against failures. It all comes down to how much risk are you willing to assume. We, the project, are willing to assume more risk than probably most people here. Because we want to see the OJs. We want to learn about the OJs. If you want to come and sue us, we have $1,500 in our bank account. Somebody
I'm filing suit.
Here for their corporate account at Microsoft is a little bigger, so they're not going to sue quite as much risk as we're willing to sue. So we provide different ways of data control. The more data control you apply, the more risk you reduce.
This isn't like a partnership.
The Department of Justice has its own section here in the slides in a couple minutes. How does that make you feel?
We're just giddy about it.
I can feel it.
But actually, Jeff, why don't you go to the next slide? It shows what we're talking about. This is your replace option.
Oh, excellent. Okay. What we see here is a basic Snort rule. I didn't know you had the slide. We're looking for what looks like some DNS traffic going out. And basically you see a content line there. That's the content match against the Black Hat's exploit. And you'll notice that you can match whatever. You can match against binary content or whatever. If it's in the payload, you're going to be able to match it. And you can see here in the yellow in the replace string, we've made a couple changes. We've changed to SLED. We zeroed out some of the bytes. And also, they changed the path to shell. Now, another interesting thing you could potentially do is you could use DNAT. So when you saw an alert like this trigger, you could DNAT him and redirect him elsewhere, and perhaps even alter the path to point at some other executable. So there's a lot of fun things you could do with this sort of stuff. Perhaps you'd want to point him at some executable that would fire up something like HoneyD or something like that that then could actually try and gather a little more data from the guy before he figures out what's going on.
So there's a lot of different options here in data control. We're just doing some of them. But what we're most excited about with Jeff's demo is you now have the ability to modify the packets. So yes, the packets are going out and doing all sorts of stuff. But we're not just counting packets. We're looking at a signature-based system. Yes, it's still not working. It's okay. But for us, we're willing to assume that reason. Now the question is, are you? Next slide. Let's go back. Okay. The other thing, we don't have a slide on it yet because it's really so new. We just got the code working yesterday.
Yeah.
In the virtual HoneyNet.
Which?
We're working on data control now, on data capture.
Oh, we're doing data capture. Okay, I'm sorry.
other big thing that we were talking about, can we go back to the network slide, is data capture. How do you capture everything the bad guy does, how the bad guy knows, especially when it's all encrypted? Well, what we do is we sort of kernelize all the running blocks now. We capture everything in kernel space. You SSH it, we'll capture all your keys. You SCP it, we'll capture everything you've uploaded. HTTPS, SSL top, it doesn't matter because we're capturing it all in kernel space. She's going to dictate how to hop and all that stuff. And I really don't understand kernel code. That's what we got there.
Well,
K2 and some of the other guys here. However, with the honeypot, capturing that information is not the key element. Capturing keystrokes in kernel space is not new. However, we can't log into the honeypot because the bad guy can see it. I'm on a honeypot. Change it. Blow it away. So the key element now is how do you can't capture that information offloaded from the honeypot without him knowing. And you got to do it relatively easy. There's a fault. Just hit the serial cable on the honeypot and dump it from the serial cable. All right, you've got 30 honeypots. 30 serial cables all going to central system. Yeah, serial cables work, but it's a pain in the ass. So, what Ed's going to talk about here in a minute, what we're going to demo to you, some very relatively new exciting stuff, where we capture everything in kernel space. You see the honeypot? But what he does is he takes all that information and just dumps it to the network. And what it does is emulates or spoofs netbios, spoofs DNS, spoofs NTP. So the evil hacker will see these packets on the wire, but he won't know they're coming from his honeypot. The source IP address is the NTP server. The source MAC address is the NTP server. It's an NTP broadcast packet. Or it's coming from that, you know, that Windows XP box down on the network. And it's just NetBIOS broadcast. So the packet is spoofed to look like it's coming from somebody else. Hell, it doesn't even have to be IP, do IPX, do DECnet, do Apple Cloud, you know, all these different types of things.
I just apply voltages.
I just came with someone. No.
Morse code.
I've seen that Morse traffic coming from all these different.
Or carrier synthesis.
But he doesn't realize that it's keystrokes. It's files transferred. Now,
you'd have to get to a really.
That's
basic level, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of NIC drivers in my account.
So now, if you capture the data, and you go ahead and upload it in a secure manner, the bad guy doesn't realize it's right in front of his face. It looks. Most of them we've seen right now have to look. But the more of this guy's might look. So the idea is it looks, it's in his face. Why don't you go describe a little bit how it works?
Okay.
Like that?
Yeah. It's encrypted, and it looks like random stuff. I'll try to get into that in a second. Basically, the motivation, like Lance was saying, was, you know, so once, you know, a little while back, you know, I'm firing up this new Gen 2 honey net that I just got together, you know, and like a kid on Christmas Day, I'm all excited. And so I fired up, and I'm not getting a whole lot of activity, and then one day over the weekend, bam, I get something. And of course, you know, to my dismay, which is predictable now, I guess, is, you know, somebody broke in and immediately installed their own version of SSH. I was kind of bummed because, you know, I got a bunch of stuff they FTP'd, but I didn't get all their, you know, all their keystrokes and stuff. I was sad. So I figured, well, I got to do something about this. And so at the same time that I started looking at this, some other members of the project were throwing around some code that was basically going to solve this problem, and then so I immediately said, hey, that looks like something I want to help develop. And essentially what we have is we have a rootkit that we've modified, and essentially the modifications allow us to gather all system read and write data that we want, and we can configure to what we're looking for. That gets stored somewhere, and then we have a application that is sort of a, when we've decoupled these to make it modular, so we can switch out the application we use to export the data. But we have another application that takes that data that the rootkit logs and then puts it somewhere where we can get it. And essentially what we do right now is this thing spews it onto the network in an encrypted form, and it's able to forge, you know, the source, destination, MAC, IP addresses, ports, all that. There's a variety of ways we can configure this and tune this so we can make it, we can, if we would like, we can make it mimic, NetBIOS or whatever. We can also do things like just completely randomize the IP addresses it's using and MACs and keep them in pairs so we don't have any weird paramatching things going on. And then just basically just what our goal with this initial version is to reduce the amount of suspicion of this traffic load down to a point where people aren't so motivated to just stare at the network traffic the whole time thinking they're on a honeypot. Because, you know, the thing about it is as long as things are subtle, your chance of something is that paranoid, well, who knows? We'll see, you know. But this is just the first version. The other thing that the export application does when it puts stuff on the wire is it introduces a certain amount of variability into how often it looks at the data and how often it exports it. And it also sends out null traffic. So basically, we send out decoys when there's no activity on the system. That way, independent of whether or not the person is, you know, typing at the keyboard, or, I'm sorry, typing on their TTY or SCPing files or whatever, there's still activity on the network, and so hopefully their level of suspicion is reduced some. The end result is there's also a third sort of system that was required, or I should say tool, and that is something to take this data off the network. And so that's also been developed, mostly by a guy named Michael Clark, who's one of our colleagues. And that is a really handy thing. Obviously, it collects all the data and then puts in a log file. And so we can run n number of honeypots on a network. And what happens is this will collect all the data from all these honeypots, decrypt it, and then store it in a log file for each honeypot. And then we also have some parse scripts, and then we can take that and then process it the way we want. The net result of this is that we are able to fairly easily monitor any interactive TTY activity from an intruder, so we can see all the commands they typed, all the output if we wish. The other very, very interesting thing that I had a lot of fun doing was modifying it so that we were able to actually pull down files that are SCP'd and any other type of SSH activity. And depending on the direction, depending on where the SSH or SCP session is initiated, if the hacker is on a honeypot and SCPs a file to that honeypot, let's say they immediately break in with an exploit, SCP a file from their home machine back onto the local machine, we now have that file, and we also have their password. And that all gets, that immediately then gets dumped basically on the network where we can then use it in our analysis efforts.
Answer a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, shoot. You can't tell the kernel modules there. We use a rootkit. We derive this from a rootkit. So the end result is the process that exports the data is hidden. The module we installed initially to provide the rootkit functionality is also hidden. I should also provide this with the rootkit itself is of course OS specific. So everything else is somewhat platform independent though. So the upshot is, you know, there are ways of determining that something suspicious is going on. There are some weaknesses inherent in the rootkit, but our goal was basically to sort of, you know, flip the coin to the people that use the rootkits and take advantage, you know, why rewrite something? We basically just took it off the shelf rootkit, essentially, and tailored it to our needs. I'm fairly impressed with how subtle it is, and it's not terribly easy to find it, but you know, if you're